And you're on the Postman Show, care of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And today's guest is going to be Francis A. Boyle. Francis is a professor at Illinois University. He's one of America's leading experts on the dangers of research into deadly cells, author of the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 and the draft of the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. He served on the board of directors of Amnesty International from 1988 to 1992. And is currently a professor of international law at the University of Illinois. Good morning, Francis. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me on. Just one correction. I authored the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, which was the U.S. domestic implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention. I was not involved in the drafting of the convention itself, but my legislation was passed unanimously by both houses of the United States Congress and signed into law by President George Bush Sr., and it was designed to deal with the dual-use DNA genetic engineering manufacturing of biological weapons, in particular by the United States government, that were not really on the horizon at the time of the drafting of the Biological Weapons Convention itself in 1972. So I wanted to pick up that technology as well.
So in doing so, it basically brought you in contact with a lot of specialists in this field. You got to read a lot of the declassified documents. So you know, you're pretty au fait with the overall background of biological and biowarfare technology in the United States. Would that be a correct assessment?
Could you please speak up? I think the line...
Basically, in doing this process, it brought you up to speed with the whole biowarfare technology, and you got access to a lot of declassified papers. So you're pretty familiar with the ins and outs of bioweapons technology in the United States, yes?
Right. Well, I've been involved in this since... academically since the early 1980s when the Reagan administration and its neocons decided to get into exploiting DNA genetic engineering research in order to produce biological weapons, yes.
In the second part of the show, I'm going to go back and look at a few incidences.
You're going to have to speak up there because, you know, the Skype connection, I can barely hear you.
Right, yeah, well, I'll speak a bit louder in that case. I was just saying, in the second part of the show, I'm going to look at some of these incidences, but if we fast forward to Ebola right now, the official story is that a new strain of Ebola has emerged. It's never been seen before. It's out of its normal tropical area of where it's normally seen, which by about 3,500 Ks. The CDD is telling us that it got there by an unknown species of bats. Three questions. Has anyone provided a copy or come up with one of these bats and shown that the strain links back to the bats? How many strains are we dealing with at the moment? And what are the statistical chances of more than one strain emerging at the same time?
Well, let me deal with the premise first. I call that the bat twaddle theory. And in fact, there was a scholarly article published in Science magazine by so-called scientists from Harvard and MIT who were involved in trying to do a genetic typing of the current Zaire Ebola in West Africa behind the pandemic. And they tried to argue that this had come 3,500 kilometers from West Africa, from Zaire to West Africa by migration by means of bats. And I was able to debunk that entire science article within about 15 minutes sitting in my PJs on a Saturday morning sipping my coffee. You can read the debunking on a well-known website here in the United States called Washington blog. It's total hogwash, and basically, this is the death scientist that I call them involved at that BSL-4 Kenema lab that appears to have been responsible for this pandemic to cover their tracks, and that's really that's, what's going on here.
I mean, that's
so there's
one of the
no there's no scientific basis at all for the bat twaddle theory. It's baloney.
I mean, that's what I found is that you looked at the situation. First of all, they aren't able to provide a bat with an infection, but when you actually look at ground zero, when I looked at St. Jude's in Guinea, which is in the border town of, well, my pronunciation is a bit poor, is Gusita, which is in the heart of the Mano River Union. This is exactly where the Corgenix Metal Corporation, a worldwide developer, market of diagnostic test kits, were conducting their research on human trials. So, when you actually find at ground zero, you have an organization doing research on that strain of Ebola that's funded by the U.S. Army, it starts to get you a little bit nervous.
Well, I think that's correct, and the evidence seems to indicate that the current pandemic originated out of experimental vaccines. As a matter of fact, the real ground zero, as you know, is in Kenema, Sierra Leone, and that BSL-4 lab was then shut down by the Sierra Leone government. Because the Sierra Leone government believed that the pandemic had been set off by Tulane University administering everyone experimental Ebola shots. And Tulane has a long and notorious history of doing this dual-use offensive-defensive biological warfare work. And there are other big pharma over there with all sorts of so-called vaccines. But I think the real ground zero was Kenema. That was the BSL-4 being run by Harvard, MIT, USAMRIID, which is basically Fort Detrick. And that I think, is where this really came from, yes.
Well, let's go there, for example, because, I mean, that's another situation. Once you look at ground zero and then you look at sort of the first responders, first of all, we've got that it's Fort Detrick. And that, of course, immediately brings up the anthrax 2000 case, where we see that, initially they were telling us that it was Al-Qaeda. Then the Federation of American Scientists stuck their hands up and said, well, actually, we've gene sequences, and this actually traces back to Fort Detrick. And, what's interesting is that during that investigation, they named a suspect. That suspect died in 2006. But we see that same strain then emerges in Pakistan in 2008, 2 years after the suspect's dead. We also see that we have outbreaks of hemorrhagic fever in Pakistan and Afghanistan, which, again, there's quite often rumors there of biowarfare, and in Kazakhstan. So we've got full cases even before this situation. When you look at ground zero, it leads back to Fort Detrick. And when you look at some of the people that are involved in this, you've got some very dysfunctional and some very political extremists working in that environment. Again, it's if these are the people that come into the rescue, it doesn't make me feel particularly safe.
Right. Well, as to the anthrax attacks in October 2001, I was the first person here in the United States to publicly state that this was super weapons grade anthrax that could only have been manufactured in a United States government biowarfare lab. And I did that. I was speaking at a conference for the running a workshop for the Conference for Responsible Genetics at Harvard Divinity School Saturday, November 3rd, 2001 in Cambridge, Mass. And I made these statements in an interview to Fox News, and it was reported. And then I said the same thing to the BBC, and then the same thing to Pacifica Radio Network. You can find the citations for that in my book, Biowarfare and Terrorism. And eventually they did admit that the anthrax did come out of Fort Detrick, and I believe also Battelle, which had a history of doing dirty biological warfare work for the Pentagon and the CIA. And probably all this is stockpiled. They have a stockpile of this at Dugway Proving Ground out in Utah, where they keep all these supplies of biowarfare that work agents to, you know, it's called Dugway Proving Ground because they have to prove it first. And that's where all these things are tested and proven to work before they're actually used and deployed as weapons. So that, so, you know, I said that right away, November 3rd, 2001, right?
So in the
you're going to have to really slow down and speak up because, again, you know, Skype connections just aren't the best in the world.
We'll
they're
do.
They're not the same as landlines, but go ahead.
So in the context that the 2001 case proved to come from Fort Detrick, in the context of the 2008 case where anthrax was sent to the Prime Minister, again proved to come from Fort Detrick, and in the context that we now know from declassified papers relating to the South African biowarfare project in the 1990s, which again involved personnel at Fort Detrick, and we know that the original outbreak in 1976 was biowarfare, why do you think it is that the media has such a difficulty even considering this concept in the first place?
The difficulty in understanding this, because here in the United States, there's outright censorship of anyone saying these things, and in particularly me, we put out two or three press releases with the Institute for Public Accuracy, which I think you have already received, setting forth my viewpoints, going out to 7,000-8,000 different media sources all here, all over the world, and none of the U.S. mainstream news media have contacted me at all, despite the fact that I was the person who wrote the law. It's just outright censorship. Second, you have to understand, during the October 2001 anthrax attacks, the U.S. government agents involved in those attacks also deliberately attacked the media with anthrax to make it clear to the media, mainstream media, TV stations and whatever, that if you cover this story, we'll kill you. So that message got through. I'm totally censored out here of mainstream news media in the United States. I do get some interviews with alternative media sources. Mainstream in Europe won't touch me. I gave a very long interview to The Telegraph. They never published it. So for the last 3 to 4 weeks now, everyone knows my viewpoints, but none of the mainstream news media will publish them or contact me or whatever. Indeed, I've had numerous dropped interviews that we've agreed on interviews, and all of a sudden the people aren't there when I'm supposed to interview with them. So I guess you can figure that one out for yourself.
But in the context, I mean, you know, you're an eminent professor. You come from a very prestigious academic background. You're not alone. I mean, you've got Dr. Jane Orange, who's the Associate Director of American Physicians and Surgeons, and she ran an article saying Ebola, false alarm or poor man's atomic bomb, where she, again, very carefully worded, said, suggested that, well, maybe we need to look at whether this is a man-made variant. You've got Dr. Cyril Broderick, a Liberian doctor, who put forth his reasons. I mean, again, this is a...
Well, let me respond to that, the doctor you mentioned, she's the only other person here in the United States I'm aware of who has publicly said that. As for the doctor in Liberia, I don't know him personally. I agree with his conclusions, but he's just dismissed because he's from Liberia.
So
you only have two credible sources here in America that I am aware of making these statements.
outside of America, you've got, you know, Dr. Granati, and again, my pronunciation is Onishinko, former chief sanitary doctor, basically saying that we have to look at this as being potentially a man-made variant. And this is the one that I find quite interesting, is that we've got a researcher here, I think it's David Kirsten, he's a researcher in Frederick, Maryland. 2010, he says the fear is that the government is doing things in biolabs in West Africa that it might be reluctant to do at Fort Detrick. I mean, this was written 2 years before the outbreak. In fact, 4 years before the outbreak.
Sure. Yeah, so I have an affidavit I filed with Fort Detrick condemning all this type of work. We know they've aerosolized Ebola at Fort Detrick. We've now found out that they've aerosolized Ebola up at the Winnipeg BSL-4 facility in Canada. But you have different people around the world expressing these viewpoints, but this other doctor you mentioned and me are the only two Americans, and no one's going to cover these other sources. It's that simple.
I mean, there was an interesting case that came up when the Director General of the World Health Organization also used the word man-made variant. Now, this was
I can't really comment on it.
Well, it was very widely commented, and I tracked down the original source, and unfortunately, you can't actually make any statement about it, because since then, the World Health Organization
I can't comment on a source I haven't seen. If you can get me the actual text, I'll have a look at it, but, you know, that's basically hearsay.
I we'll skip along. But what I am interested in is, what do you know about this White House memo where they've actually suspended biowar defense research, and they've done it very quickly, very suddenly, and again, it gets one little piece of the Washington Post, and then that's it.
Again, I can barely hear you because of the Skype connection.
Right.
Maybe
you
should have this interview on a landline or something. Go ahead.
I was just
try
talking about
again.
The White House memo where the White House has suspended all defensive research on biowarfare technology. Do you know anything about that?
Well, this is all baloney. The United States government, since September 11, 2001, has spent $79 billion on biological research. And that statement that came out of the White House basically implies and admits that they were doing all this hideous type of offensive biological warfare work that violated the Biological Weapons Convention and my statute, by the way, and that's punishable by life in prison. So it's a de facto admission right there. Although if you look at the list of agents, Ebola isn't on there. Because if Ebola had been on the list, everyone would be saying, well, what have you been doing with Ebola along with everything else? So that's why Ebola wasn't on the list. But they basically admitted it right there, sure.
What do you think about the speed with which this vaccine's been knocked out? I mean, do you find it interesting that they're able to manufacture a vaccine so quickly? And also, I mean, the Russians say that they've got a vaccine that they're ready to use now. So why is no one taking advantage of the Russian vaccine?
Right. The Russians had a vaccine, I guess, based on some type of horse serum or something like that. Well, look, you have to understand the dual-use technology here and the manufacture of a biological weapon. You need the following components. First, you need the agent itself, the offensive agent. And typically it's been genetically modified to make it more virulent or airborne. For example, in the case of Ebola now, what we're dealing with here is a 70% fatality rate of this Ebola, whereas the original one had a 50% fatality rate. And it does appear that, you know, it's been enhanced somehow in terms of lethality. And also, perhaps, in terms of, I won't say precisely aerosolized, but somehow it seems to move through the air a lot farther than people have been saying. So
this one likes the cold, too, doesn't it?
Let me finish the point. So once you have the the offensive agent, then you develop a vaccine for it using the exact same type of DNA genetic engineering. It's sort of like a reverse engineering process with DNA genetic engineering. And so these vaccines that we're seeing today being tested out come from the fact that they already had the offensive agent. So when you take an offensive agent that's been genetically modified, and then you have a vaccine that has been genetically modified, you then have a biological weapon. Because, you know, using a biological agent without a vaccine is extremely dangerous because of the blowback effect. So you want to have both the agent and the vaccine before they're deployed. So my guess is that all these vaccines have all of a sudden emerged because we already had the offensive agent to begin with, and they were working on the vaccines to produce the weapon. And it appears that's what Tulane was doing over there at Kenema. They were testing out a vaccine, probably with some type of live Ebola in there to produce antigens, and that gave everyone the Ebola. And probably, again, more lethal than the 50%, and it appears some capacity to be airborne to some extent. We're not exactly sure how, but that type of work has been done. For example, the Reston Ebola, Reston, Virginia. It's clear there that it's called Reston Ebola, but basically the researchers at that lab were trying to figure out how to spread Ebola by the air. And that's how it jumped from one chimpanzee cage to another. It was airborne.
So
they called it Reston Ebola. So it could be that what we're dealing with here in the pandemic in West Africa is a genetically modified organism type Ebola that makes it airborne and to some extent, and also more lethal. And that's, you know, why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Ken Amblek is a former Soviet bioweapons, and he defected and went to work for Fort Detrick. And in his book, he writes a lot about a Chimera variation of Ebola, and he goes on about, he gets very excited about it. He was also one of the people of interest during the 2001 investigation. Do you think that this strain of Ebola is a Chimera variation?
Well, sure, Alibek came over here and he gave us all their technology. That was the condition for us to take him in and give him asylum. And so he knew all about the Chimera and what it was about. So that, you know, they had that technology, and I'm sure he had to replicated for them. Whether that's precisely what we're seeing here, I really can't say. We do know that the National Institutes of Health had a Chimera for Ebola and the common cold, to put together the two viruses. I call that Coldbola. Well, and then down in Galveston, you had another one of these death scientists, a guy named Giesbert, working for the Pentagon, and he put together a Chimera of hoof and mouth disease and Ebola. And hoof and mouth disease, as you know, is far more, it's pretty contagious. I call that flubola. And then we also have another Dr. Mengele at the University of Wisconsin, which is like 3 hours north of me here. He does GMO work. He resurrected the Spanish flu virus for the Pentagon. And he does GMO work on different types of flu. And he also does GMO work on Ebola, making Ebola more lethal. And it was so bad, he had to move it all up to the BSL-4 facilitate
I'm going to have to
development.
wind you up. I'm going to have to wind you up right now because we're literally coming to our break. We've been speaking to Dr. Francis A. Boyle on the Postman Show, care of Vinnie Eastwood Show, www.vinnieeastwood.com. We're going to cut to a break and we'll see you in the second part of the show very shortly. And you're on the Postman Show. And our guest today is Francis Boyle. And we're talking about the Ebola outbreak. Francis, I just want to go back to the how this strain of Ebola is quite different from what we've seen beforehand. And you make reference to Cole Bowler. And I believe on Alex Jones' show, he makes the point that the US Army actually note that this strain likes the cold. Is that correct?
Well, you know, we haven't gotten straight information out of exactly what's going on there, but this is a brand new type of Ebola. This is not just the original Zaire Ebola. As I said, it's more lethal, number one, and it appears to be airborne to some extent. All previous outbreaks of the Zaire Ebola have been contained. But not this one. And by the way, there is an indigenous Ebola in West Africa called the Ivory Coast Ebola.
Yep.
And that was contained. So this clearly is not the old Ebola or indigenous Ebola. It's a new Ebola. I believe it was genetically engineered, and it probably here in the United States. And then it came out of that Kenema lab for sure.
One of the things which I also want to clarify with you, because my reading maybe differs a wee bit from yours, is that my understanding is that when this strain emerged, while its lethality is much higher, its actual initial infection rate is quite substantially lower than what we've seen. And now this actually fits quite well with the model of arena biowarfare, because previously the problem that has always been said about Ebola was that it spread too quickly, so it burnt out its host, whereas this one actually...
Could you please slow down?
Sorry, it's the Kiwi accent.
Yeah, I think it's the New Zealand accent, and I have an American accent, so and the Skype connection, so please slow down a bit.
All right, my point is, even though this has got a much more higher lethality, its initial infection rate was a lot lower, which actually fits in with it being a biowarfare model, and means that in some ways this strain is actually made an evolutionary backwards, which, you know, that's just not scientifically possible.
Well, if something is genetically modified, it does have a tendency to reduce the original effects of whatever they're working with to some extent.
Hmm.
So again, we're just not sure precisely what this is, because the one assay we have, the genetic typing, was done by these Harvard MIT scientists who were up to their eyeballs in this, and they covered it all up and lied about it in this science article that I debunked. And by the way, let me point out how shoddy all this is. That article in Science, it was published by a team of researchers, Harvard and MIT, and then it had to go through their scholarly review process by at least two other people signing off on it, and I debunked it all in 15 minutes. So, you know, we don't know exactly what this is over there. We can speculate. I think what really needs to be done is someone has to go down to Tulane and arrest those people and proceed to interrogate them as to what were they actually testing out there in Kenema. That's the only way we can really find out here what we are dealing with. All the rest is speculation, I regret to say. And the one study we have was completely bogus, and I debunked it. And there are no other analyses I'm aware of precisely what is going on, what is the Ebola virus, the chimera, whatever, that we're dealing with over there. So my analyses here simply have to be based on my knowledge of the type of research that has been done and is being done here in the United States that has come out in the public record. And the problem there is, after 9/11/2001, all this research was heavily classified. Before that, under the Reagan administration, it was not classified, and you could get access to it. But after 9/11/2001, all this is classified, and all you can really do is follow some of the trade publications to read the contracts being let out to these different universities and public corporations to do work on Ebola or other extremely dangerous pathogens. That's the only way now you can really try to track this stuff.
Counterpunch, I believe Alexander Cockburn runs that, and they did an interview with you, and I think, you know, they made the point that, you know, even if you're an alarmist, because of the history that the U.S. has with biowarfare research, we should be taking this seriously. You know, I did a bit of research, and I've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years, and, you know, you've got something like nearly 4 outbreaks or break-ins into laboratories going on in the United States virtually every year for the last 10 years. I mean, the proof out there that people are going out there and actually stealing the stuff, and then actually the outbreaks are occurring because of research, is quite extensive. I mean, you just look at the South Africans' role in that part of the world during the 90s. I mean, it's acknowledged from their own Truth and Reconciliation that, you know, they did Ebola, they did anthrax, they injected prostitutes with HIV. You know, why do people take it such a hard concept to think that people would actually do this when there's a mountain of evidence to show that this has been going on for nearly three decades?
Right, and the CIA was working down there in South Africa with Boussin, and they got everything he had, that's for sure. Mm. But, it shows you how effective the brainwashing system is, right? Certainly in America, my government, how could they possibly do anything like that? What can I say? I've done the best I can. I got the statute drafted and approved unanimously by both houses of Congress, and it says quite clearly in there, life in prison for this type of work. And I even got published and circulated to life scientists after it was enacted into law, a notice to all of them saying they face life in prison if they did this type of work. Money talks, and that's, we're talking about $79 billion spent on this type of work. We now have 14,000 so-called life scientists doing death science work here in America, just like Dr. Mengele. And we have close to 1,500 labs doing this type of work as well. You had mentioned Alibek and his defection from the old Soviet biopreparat, which they did have, although now it's collapsed with the collapse of the Soviet Union. Well, here in the United States, we now have our own biopreparat. We have an offensive biological warfare industry that has clearly come out since 9/11/2001, $79 billion. $79 billion, in constant dollars, it's twice what we spent on the Manhattan Project to develop the atom bomb. So the United States is engaged in a total all-out offensive biological warfare arms race. And this goes back actually to the neoconservatives' Project for New American Century. In my book, Biowarfare and Terrorism, I have their PNAC document there, September 2000, before Bush came to power, saying quite clearly they wanted to exploit biological weapons as well as chemical weapons. And the neocons were also in power under Reagan starting in 1981. And they were doing the same thing under Reagan, only not at the same scale, but, 5, $6 billion. which is why I lobbied my legislation through Congress to try to stop it. But after 9/11, it, you know, just became a flood, and the anthrax attacks. They and now today Obama says he's going for another $6 billion to deal with Ebola. Well, that's ridiculous. They've already budgeted an extra $6 billion for next year anyway, on biological warfare purposes, and then the $6 billion will simply be used to finance more offensive biological warfare work, and in addition, be used as a slush fund to finance the U.S. invasion of West Africa, which is going on right now. You have 4,000 troops being put in there, and they have no training in to medical care. It's the 101st Airborne Division, which are our shock troops, along with the Marines.
And of course, next door you've got
Division, their headquarters is moved there, 500 people. And head of AFRICOM, U.S. Africa Command, is moving there. And my guess is they'll move AFRICOM there from Stuttgart, West Germany. Liberia has already invited them to come. So, you know, if all this money was spent allegedly for the purpose of protecting the health of the American people from these biowarfare agents such as Ebola, but as you can see from the total pandemonium over here in the United States, none of this money has been spent at all on public health care or preparations here in America. It's all been spent on this Dr. Mengele type biowarfare work involving 14,000 scientists and 1,500 labs, depending on how you want to count it. Look, there's almost nothing left of legitimate life sciences here in the United States. If you're a so-called life science person, putting aside medical doctors, microbiologists, either you're doing death science work involving part of the U.S. biowarfare industry, or you're manufacturing frankenfoods for Monsanto. And now it's even worse than that, in that Monsanto is now getting involved in Ebola using DNA genetic engineering work. Back when I was trying to get my legislation through Congress, I met with a representative from Monsanto. This was the late 1980s or so, to tell Monsanto that my legislation was not designed to go after genetically modified food. Not that I approved of it, but my job was to get the anti-biowarfare research through. So I said, look, under no circumstances can this legislation even be arguably applied to genetically modified food. I wrote it. Indeed, the legislative history makes this very clear. I drafted it. And so I want to assure you people at Monsanto that, you know, this is not directed against you. And basically, I did not want them lobbying against the legislation. And the guy from Monsanto said, well, that's fine. You know, we have no intention of getting into biowarfare research. And the message was quite clear. All the money was to be made, as Monsanto saw in the late 1980s, in genetically modified food and not biowarfare. And that was the correct decision. There wasn't much money in biowarfare at that time. It was a purely market decision. It had nothing to do with principles. But now, just last year, Monsanto has gotten in to biowarfare, and in particular into Ebola. They say they are using their DNA genetic engineering technique that they use to genetically modify food. Now they're applying it to Ebola. Well, that's simply astounding. Monsanto has admitted the science is the same, which is correct. And the scientists are the same, which is also correct. So you have the science being... So let me finish my point.
Yeah.
So basically, the same people who are doing GMO food for Monsanto can now be doing GMO Ebola for Monsanto. The only difference is doing GMO Ebola for Monsanto safely would require a BSL-4 facility, but that could be right down the hallway from where they're GMOing your food. So this is, you know, this is a major break for Monsanto to get into biowarfare work. And in my opinion, I think anyone opposing GMO food now has to use this information against Monsanto and to say, how can we trust you to produce safe GMO food when you're GMOing Ebola with the exact same technology, and you could be using the same scientists, and it could be in the same facility. So they finally broke down. I guess they concluded finally a market decision that in fact there was money to be made in allegedly manufacturing a vaccine for Ebola. But as I said before, to manufacture the vaccine, first you have to create the agent itself. So Monsanto is now working with live Ebola. And these are the people making our food as well.
We had a case in New Zealand in the 1995s where we had an outbreak of rabbit calici virus, which came about because gave farmers samples, which they then released into the wild. Now, interestingly enough, the review board originally of that was made up of Robert Shope, who was a U.S. biowarfare microbiologist, Dr. Donald Burke, who's also a U.S. biowarfare microbiologist, Dr. Alexander Kuzminov, representative of New Zealand Ministry of Health, who was a former Russian biowarfare scientist. We had Dr. Heinrich Moller, who's involved in pest eradication at Otago University. No, nobody was actually a virologist. The four people that turned around and said, oh, yes, you should release it, all had bioweapons links. When they actually had the outbreak and then they did a review on this, the review was sent to government to be looked at. Every single person sitting on this on the review board worked for a pharmaceutical company. So you have a situation where the people who are meant to be the watchkeepers are actually also, on the other hand, receiving the money from dubious sources, yes?
Well, I haven't studied that outbreak in New Zealand, but my general rule of thumb is this, that wherever you see a totally unexplained outbreak of some type of biological pandemic, whether for human beings or animals, the odds are pretty good that some type of biological warfare agent is involved. And then you yourself have already identified all these biowarfare death scientists involved in it. So I think that that's a pretty good conclusion to reach, that, you know, you just have two dots to connect there, and I think it's obvious what was going on. And yes, then a lot of these people have financial arrangements with pharmaceutical companies to develop patents on these biological warfare agents and vaccines. The technology is the same. For example, National Institutes of Health has a patent on what I've called Coldbola. And the reason they have that patent is they control the technology. They can control the vaccine, which they've now, they say they're going to test. And then they're going to make money, all the scientists and the pharmaceutical companies. Likewise, what I called Flubola down there in Galveston, they have a patent on the technology. Again, the DNA technology is the same for both the offensive agent and the vaccine. If you make the agent, then you make the vaccine, and you've patented, and you then work with Big Pharma to make money on the vaccine. Meanwhile, you could be the same person giving the agent itself to other people. And I think that's pretty much what happened there in West Africa, that that Kinema lab. They were testing out this experimental vaccine using what appears to be live Ebola, and it gave live new Ebola. It gave the people live
and
Ebola.
And it's important to note that that risk was actually warned about before. You know, as I said, 2010, people saying, hey, they might be doing this in West Africa, and this could be, you know, this could be, this was, people warned them about this was going to happen.
Right. Well, I was in a documentary, Anthrax Wars, by Eric Nadler, a friend of mine, might have come out to New Zealand, won several awards. And I said several years ago, I said, you know, this is a biocatastrophe waiting to happen. It is a statistical certainty. And
I mean,
now it has happened.
What I also find quite interesting is that, you know, when I look at the outbreak of Ebola in the Philippines in 2008, this traced back to the laboratory. When we look at the outbreak of SARS in 2003, the very first person to be, you know, the infected was Professor Liu Xianlun, who was a biowarfare specialist in respiratory diseases in China. When we look at the swine flu outbreak
in
2009...
Let me go one point. How about one point at a time? Yes, I believe SARS was did escape out of a biological warfare lab there in China. Look, the Russians know that the United States government, what they're doing. They can read the same sources I'm reading without even having spies and intelligence agents. The Chinese know as well. So they're certainly both doing exactly the same type of research, death science research, that the Americans are doing. And the French are doing it as well, for sure, the four leading centers. So I agree with you. I think SARS did escape out of a Chinese biowarfare lab over there.
They also had a case, and that was SARS, but then you had the situation with the swine flu, which, in fact, sticking with SARS, was... SARS had the gene sequence in there, which was WSN33, which stood for Wilson. He was the scientist that actually weaponized the swine flu in 1933. I mean, you have a man-made strain that turns up in SARS and then also turns up in the swine flu in 2009. I mean, what more evidence do these people actually want?
It's clear swine flu. Right, it's clear swine flu was a chimera as well, put together in a lab somewhere. Right, you have three different agents all fused together from two or three different continents. Right, that came out of a lab somewhere. There's no question about it. And remember, when it comes to pigs, the reason all this work is done on pigs or hogs or whatever you want to call them is because, and I've read this in biowarfare contracts here when you still could get them, they pick swine, pig, because they have a circulatory system and a respiratory system akin to human beings. Mm, and that's why this type of work is done in pigs or swine.
What I'm going to very, very briefly ask you, and we've got about 90 seconds, is are you also aware, and I'll follow this up on online for those who want to know more, but are you aware of all the number of scientists around the world since 2001 that have been murdered in huge numbers, and you just see this trail of bodies? Do you have any thoughts about that? Again, is this the sign that this biowarfare mafia has been out there and active for quite some time?
Oh, yes, this is well known here in the United States. Again, it's not reported in the mainstream news media. Right now we have maybe, just in the States alone, I think close to 28 dead microbiologists who it appears found out about or were engaged in clearly illegal, criminal, and dangerous biowarfare work. And perhaps threatened to blow the whistle, and they were offed. I think that's very clear. Now, likewise, the African doctor at Kinema, the director there, he came down with Ebola. He immediately went to another lab in Sierra Leone, where they had ZMapp, trying to, you know, to cure himself. And this was reported just this month in the New Yorker. There was a meeting involving Medicine Sans Frontières, the U.S. Army, and several WHO and the rest of them, and they decided not to give him the ZMapp. In other words, they killed him. And rather than give it to him, they decided to give it to two Americans who was at the lab with the ZMapp. They flew it off to two Americans who did survive. And I think the reason was this doctor knew too much about what was going on in Kamina, so they offed him. So, you know, we have Mr. Kelly there in Britain, you know, and it looks like he was about to blow the whistle on something. So, you know, there's a list, you can find it here, in the United States, Citizens for Legitimate Government, Lori Price, I think she keeps a list there of all the dead microbiologists.
I've got my own comprehensive one.
They were involved in this in one fashion or another.
We're gonna have to wind
this
up.
And they were eliminated. Carmi?
We're going to have to wind this up. I'm just going to say very quickly, when we put the podcast up and we record it, I'm going to put a large section of notes on this because I've got a lot of stuff that we didn't raise today, and that ties into the New Zealand connection as well. But we've been speaking today with Dr. Francis A. Boyle from the Illinois University. Dr. Francis Boyle, thank you very much for coming on the show. Absolutely fascinating material. Any last plugs for a book that you want to mention very quickly before we sign off?
Yeah, I think New Zealand has to completely shut off all traffic to and from West Africa. And it's not just my opinion. This fellow Giesbert down at Galveston, who's the government's top biowarfare doctor,
and we're gonna have to cut you off because we've literally run out of time. Hey, maybe we'll get you on for a follow-on show in the near future. But until next time, everyone, you're on the Postman Show. Good night and good luck.